You know, Toronto's been a special place for us in the past. I made my debut there, and so, you know, I'm excited to hopefully be ending my career at the same place that we started. I'm really excited about joining a great organization that has a great reputation. You know, I got to go to the new Player Development Center down in Dunedin. I mean, wow, it's really impressive. You know, you can just kind of see the writing on the wall and what this organization is trying to do in the future and now.
That was Kevin Gossman today at his introductory media availability with the Toronto Blue Jays. It was done via Zoom, so he wasn't here. He was there with his wife and wearing a backwards hat. It's the Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Boy, people seem to love that player development complex.
You know, it's got to be music to the ears of like Mark Shapiro, right? That, because remember, like when they were building and they were putting all that money into it. And I know there was eye rolls out there in the fan base, right? Saying,
yes.
Why are you talking about this thing,
pictures,
spring training?
And, you know, it's like a place that you'll never be allowed in as a fan.
Well, that's also it. Yeah, by the way, you can't come here. But that the idea that, well, we're building this thing and it's going to matter and it's going to be important. And yet it seems to be kind of important, to, at least to some folks. Like, it keeps getting referenced, right? That the idea that they have this facility and, you know, like the spring training complex in Dunedin, there are more spectacular spring training complexes around, like almost everyone in terms of the baseball part of it, the front-facing part of it. It's, you know, it's nice in Dunedin, but there's like little mini major league parks all over the place now.
Yeah.
And the Jay stuff isn't even on the same site. It's split between two parts in two different parts of town. But that, yeah, whatever they have done, and I haven't seen it. You haven't seen it.
No.
I'm not sure anybody's seen it. Of course, there's been a pandemic too, but
yeah.
When they show it to people, it does seem to, you know, the baseball players are impressed. And, you know, one of the many reasons, in addition to getting the most money, you know, that baseball players maybe sign one place over another, you know, has to do with facilities, I guess.
I guess. I mean, the $110 million first.
Yeah, that didn't hurt. No, that didn't hurt.
And then the facility second and Pete Walker and the city and all that. Yes, he seems like a very pleasant man, Kevin Gossman does.
Yeah, he seems happy to be a Toronto Blue Jay, which is what you would presume, again, after signing a life-changing amount of money. That he is a guy they've been pursuing, you know, low these many years, it turns out.
Holy
right?
cow,
is,
they've been hot
this
on
is
his
a quest.
Heel.
And, you know, look, I think we'll see. We'll have lots of time to talk about this during the dead months, but before they after midnight tonight. But look, I think they were in on Robbie Ray right to the end, and I think they were in on Gossman right to the end. And I'm, you know, not sure what the differentiator was for them. Might have been, you know, any number of things. You know, could have been money. It could have been, you know, they're two sort of similar pitchers, but they're also different pitchers.
Yeah, they are.
But I think they could have lived with either guy. They would have been happy with either guy.
You know what? I was most intrigued by Kevin when he was talking about his development as a pitcher and when things started to click for him. Of course, he was the fourth overall selection by the Baltimore Orioles and had some decent years as an Oriole. And they, you know, they moved him around in the rubber and told him to do different things. And he was working on his breaking ball and it never really developed into a plus-plus pitch. And then he goes to Cincinnati as a reliever and they said, scrap everything except for the splitter and the fastball. And he did. And like, there are numbers to back it up. He used the splitter 35% of the time, where his highest previous usage was just a shade under 22%. He had pretty good success as a reliever. And then he goes to San Francisco in that shortened year. And I mean, this is what he said today during his availability, that I said, well, you know what? This is a short year. Let me try and translate what I did as a reliever. Why couldn't that work as a starter? And lo and behold,
it did.
It did in a big time way, that the Blue Jays offered him a multi-year deal. And for various reasons, he turned it down and accepted the $18 million qualifying offer. But could you do that in 30 starts, 162 game season? He did. He threw his splitter even more. Threw his splitter 36.6% of the time, fastball just under 53% of the time. So like the breaking ball, the slider and the changeup, basically irrelevant pitches for him. He was a two-pitch pitcher. And nobody could touch him.
So there's a similarity to Robbie Ray. Because, you know, like conventional wisdom in baseball, right, is if you're a reliever, you can be a two-pitch guy. But if you're a starter, you got to have at least a third pitch.
Yeah.
Right? And maybe a fourth, but definitely a third. But maybe where's, you know, conventional wisdom being turned on its head here. Because there's one guy who won a Cy Young, you know, and one guy who just signed a great big free agent deal today, who are essentially two-pitch guys, both of them.
Yep. It's hard to quibble with the results the last couple of years. And, yeah, it's translated in a shortened season. It's translated in a longer season. We'll see if it translates in the American League, but Blue Jays have had a pretty good track record of taking a guys like Steven Matz and even Robbie Ray, right, from the National League into the American League East and then continuing to have success because, you know, Walker is a warlock.
Well, yes, Pete Walker, and, you know, has been pointed out to me lately, you should always mention Pete Walker and Matt Bushman and the other guys who work with them.
Right.
It's not just one Svengali there. but, you know, Gausman, he pitched in the American League East, so... He wasn't the same guy then, but he does know what it's like. He came back to the American League East willingly here, so I don't think he's afraid. It's a nice signing, and it's especially a nice signing when you look at the other three guys who are already locked into that rotation and said, boy, that, you know, as we sit here, like 3 months before pitchers and catchers report, maybe.
Fingers crossed.
That's not a bad place to be. And again, they're not done. You know, the Jays aren't done. Like, there's even rumbles today, and we'll see. You know,
get
like,
to it.
Well, 7 hours and a little less than 7 hours from now, the baseball world shuts down. So if you were going to sign a free agent today, you would have to be able to get him. They would have to get a medical today as well, because you can't close a deal until somebody has a medical. But I was just talking to Shai Davidi. We've both been hearing some of the same stuff, that maybe there's still one in the pipeline, but kind of hard to believe now at 5 o'clock.
Well, I mean, that being said, like, seconds ago or minutes ago, maybe close to an hour ago, Chris Taylor is officially off the market. And
we both kind of liked him as a potential Jay.
the pipe dream of Chris Taylor. And then you read stories about him personally. He very much enjoys surfing. So perhaps...
you could do that. You got the Scarborough Bluffs, below the bluffs there, that on a breezy day, it'd be brisk.
Yeah. A little better in California. But anyways, at a certain point, the Dodgers were going to stop. They were going to put themselves up against the door and stop people from leaving.
Yeah.
Because they are the Dodgers, after all. I haven't seen numbers on this thing, but the Chris Taylor idea is out the window. And we thought yesterday was the deadline because of this midnight actual deadline. But I wonder if the fact that he's a returning player to the Dodgers impacts that.
Yeah, maybe they don't have to do a medical or don't feel they have to. You know, you have to, the problem is in theory, you would have to get a guy physically to some place, to your place, mm-hmm. to your performance center.
Right.
To do the medicals before you could finalize a deal. So I guess we'll see. But yeah, you're right. That one did just come. We haven't seen numbers on Chris Taylor, have we?
I haven't seen it. Perhaps there is. You know, like I think it's probably rude for me to refresh Twitter while you're speaking. But yeah,
go ahead. I want to know. Because he would have been a really interesting piece.
Oh, he would have been a very, very intriguing piece. Now, like, if you're looking at free agency for the Blue Jays to shore up the infield, because that's the area of need, and of course you can go about it roundabout ways. You can sign an outfielder and then trade one of the guys that you have and either, you know, acquire pitching or acquire infielders that way as well. And we've talked about Ketel Marte more than a couple of times on this show. But if you're just going the free agency route, it's basically, and you're going close to the top of the market, like impact bats, it's basically Chris Bryant and Trevor Story.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. So that's, And then, you know, both. I would think Chris Bryant more than Trevor Story probably for the Jays. But
I think a lot more. Honestly, like, you dig into the Trevor Story numbers and the home road splits, and the defense is fine as a shortstop, and I'm sure it will translate fine to second base if that's where you play him. But I think somebody's going to buy more into the Trevor Story idea than they should, and I don't think it's going to work out well. This is a guy that strikes out a ton, and it might be very much a Coors Field creation.
Could be. Yeah, no, I'm with you there. So that seems unlikely to me. Chris Bryant's not completely unlikely. You know, and beyond that, I assume there will still be a deal for, we know they were in on Steven Matz, and that there's going to be probably, they're going to sign another pitcher.
Yeah.
You know, they were in on Syndergaard on the 1 year.
Yep.
So they're going to sign another guy who might be a bounce back guy or might be a pillow contract kind of guy or, you know, somebody who, by definition, is kind of a back of the rotation guy, mm-hmm. you know, and you hope it's, not Tanner Roark. It's, you know, it's somebody who, you know, because not all these gambles pay off. That's why they call them gambles.
That's right.
So one of those. I think there's probably another relief pitcher coming of some sort. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure if it's like a Kenley Jansen kind of guy. And I'm not, I kind of like the back end of their bullpen right now.
Well, you know, we really haven't spent much time talking about Yimi Garcia.
Yeah.
And they didn't, Yimi was not introduced today to the assembled masses, even though he also signed a 2-year deal. And that's also official. And the Blue Jays sent out the official release today. But he's a guy who, I guess, from an ERA standpoint, it didn't work out so well in Houston a season ago, but struck out a ton.
Yeah, but he's closed, right? So yeah. He's, you know, he is a guy that's closed games in Miami. So, no, I think he's, you know, it's not an overwhelmingly huge deal, but it's exactly the kind of deal, that's how you fill out a bullpen when you've already got Jordan Romano and you've got Mesa and you've got the guys, Simber and Richards and, you know, they've got a lot of, I think Julian Merriweather will be in there because otherwise they got to do something with him because he's out of options.
Mm-hmm.
And you're only talking about 8 guys in the bullpen. So, you know, more would be better. And again, I assume that we will see an arm or two, but I don't think they're going to be spectacular. So, yeah, what we're talking about still is a bat, an impact left-handed bat at some position.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're right to not kind of just think about it. Okay, who's on the market? Who might they sign? Like this could involve exits as well as arrivals.
Yeah, no, it's not as just clean as hey, there's an infielder out there, Chris Bryant, sign him up and then throw him at third base. I mean, that's a possibility. But yeah, the roundabout way of signing one of those outfielders that's still available and then
create an opportunity by moving somebody. Yeah, so that's kind of part of a trade here. So
or the galaxy brain thing of Freddie Freeman
or we're still trying to figure that one out. But look, here's what I will guarantee: they're not done. They might be done for today, and that means if they're done for today, that means they could be done for a couple of months.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Oh, I hate saying that.
I know.
I hate everything about this because I still don't quite know why.
No.
But everything tells me that there's not going to be a deal today, obviously, that once the lights go out at midnight tonight, there's no reason to turn the lights on again until, what, the end of January?
Yes.
Like, about even getting serious about it.
No. The date that I've read that is most important in regards to actually getting frightened about the potential loss of at least spring training time and maybe Grapefruit League games and then maybe regular – is like February 1st. If the Discord is – if the two sides are not sounding all that amicable at that point, then you start freaking out. But yeah, it has been reported that negotiations were called off today after 7 minutes of hard negotiating between the two sides.
I think we're on a Christmas break now.
I think so.
You know, honest to God, I kind of think we are on a Christmas break. And yeah, if February 1st would be approximately 2 weeks before pitchers and catchers normally report. So whenever this deal gets done, they're going to need a period to do some business because it's got a lot of business is going to get done. That could be a week. You know, it doesn't have to be much longer than that. So, you know, start back timing. And you can squeeze spring training if you have to.
Mm-hmm.
You can push the season a little bit if you have to. But with that expanded playoff next year, you're not going to want to push it too much. You're not going to play baseball into the middle of November.
Yeah, ain't that the truth?
So, but I just have a feeling. We've had a glorious month. Unexpected month of baseball talk since the World Series ended.
Yeah.
I think that's about to end.
I think you might be right, unless we want to have some lawyers on to discuss it. But let's continue our baseball conversation while we can.
Yes.
The final hours with Ben Nicholson-Smith, who was on today's Zoom call with Kevin Gausman. How's it going, Ben?
It's going great. Yeah, like you guys say, it is fun to be talking baseball while we can, although I'm sure there's still going to be chances to discuss the goings on, but this last week or so has been so fun from an entertainment standpoint.
Yeah, it makes me think that they really, and I don't know if they will and whether this is eye-opening, but really, yeah, this has been so fun. I really hope that there's a way to continue it with this new CBA, that there is a deadline for signing free agents, that we get a defined period as opposed to, you know, the way it's always been where, you know, Bryce Harper is like a week before spring training signing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's a very strong argument to be made that any way that you can possibly replicate this, you want to do it. I mean, you'll hear from people on the player side who think that if there was some sort of a deadline that the players might end up losing some leverage and they might end up having to take deals that are not quite advantageous for them. So, you know, what we're seeing this year is certainly a collection of deals that looks good for players and obviously teams can afford them. So it seems to be a win-win, but you know, it's always when you look at shifting something big like that, the unintended consequences can be pretty significant. So it's not something they would do on a whim, but I think for fans and certainly, you know, from my standpoint in the media, I think it'd be great. I think it's just so much more entertaining.
Well, and that's the only standpoint that matters, frankly, Ben, is our standpoint.
Yeah, so,
exactly.
Like, I don't care about the business. I want talk. And I think talk is good for the business, right? Like this hot stove stuff, like, hockey's built a whole little industry around it, right? Deadlines, trade deadline day, free agent frenzy day. Like it's we're talking about baseball when there's no baseball being played, and that's good for them. So, and it's, you know, in terms of it suppressing the market, man, it sure didn't suppress the market for Max Scherzer or Marcus Semien. Like it's interesting kind of what has actually happened during this lead up, with guys who, you know, in Scherzer's case and Semien's case, two guys who are on the bargaining committee, right? Two guys who are like union stalwarts, and they signed the two of the biggest deals in history.
Exactly. And, you know, you look today, the Rangers introducing Semien and Corey Seager, $500 million.
Nuts.
And those two players, I mean, that's a pretty remarkable spending spree for Texas. But yeah, like you say, I think that it really is good for the industry. And, you know, when I first started writing about baseball, it was MLB trade rumors, right? And, you know, it's not that long ago, but even then we're talking about winter meetings where you would expect that a lot of deals would happen. You know, 2009, 2010, the winter meetings were wild. You would have a lot going on. And then it just got to the point that it dragged out so much. And the off season really stopped being fun in baseball. And this year it's been fun, you know, for the first time in a few years, and it's been as good as it has been in a long time.
Yep, it has been, and Blue Jays fans have been right in the middle of it, and there is still 6¾ hours until midnight. Are you hearing things? Where's your status?
I like the idea that Benny, that somebody that there's a guy driving across that causeway in Tampa now, like 100 miles an hour, to try and get his medical done in Dunedin.
Exactly. I mean, if I was talking to an agent today, not one who's dealing with the Blue Jays, but the thinking was that if they wanted to get their player signed, they would have to physically get their player into position. So, you know, you start counting down the hours for driving or flying the player to the right spot, because that's what they're essentially up against on a day like this.
Yeah, that's wild. So you think anything happens for the Blue Jays in the next 6½ hours?
It's hard to predict that they would. I mean, it would be great. It would be, you know, again, entertaining. It would be really interesting to mm-hmm. see what they do. I'm not holding my breath, certainly. And yeah, I mean, I think that one way or another on the bargaining question, it certainly seems, as you guys were saying before, it really seems like we're headed for a lockout, you know, at midnight or shortly after.
So let's, in terms of business still to be done by the Jays, Ben, like we were just talking about, obviously, the you know, adding Gausman to that rotation, the four kind of pillars of the rotation that are in place right now, they're in a, you know, pretty good spot compared to where they were a year ago. I assume they'll still maybe look for depth pitching. If, you know, the fact they were in on Mats tells you that, or that they were in on Syndergaard, that there's probably a back of the rotation arm or a bounce back guy or a pillow contract guy that's still to come. But, you know, the way the big move this if and I think there is going to be another splashy move here, whether it's by free agency or by trade, somebody's going to hit from the left side, someone's going to be playing in the infield, but we were just talking about it, you know, there are other ways to skin a cat here, right? That, you know, it could be, you could shuffle the deck in the outfield, there could be guys exiting as well as guys arriving.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that early in the offseason, just a few weeks ago, the Jays were getting a ton of interest in their catchers and in their outfielders. So, you know, no one wants to think about trading a guy like Teoscar Hernandez, or even Lourdes Gurriel Jr. has been a very good hitter for this team on a consistent basis. But, you know, those guys would have trade value as well. So there are ways that you could potentially get creative. And I do think that when you're looking at their overall needs, they've made a lot of progress this week with Gausman and Yimi Garcia. Those are two really nice additions, but they can't be done. I mean, they definitely have to add an infielder. Mm-hmm. And I do think, too, like, you know, when you think about trade talks, a lot of that has been pushed to the side this week because so much has been happening in free agency. And if you focus on trades, like, you're risking that you miss out on the big names. And that's not a risk that teams like the Blue Jays can take. So then, you know, and I'm not even sure what the rules are. Maybe you guys know this, but you know, what kind of trade talks can happen during a potential lockout. But in theory, that's the sort of thing that the Jays could do a lot of.
I was just thinking about that. Like, there's no, I can't see any reason why general managers couldn't speak among themselves, right? Like if there was, if there are things that had to be worked out and, you know, with an agent or with a player to facilitate a trade, obviously that's not going to happen. But, you know, I'm sure, you know, can't Ross Atkins pick up the phone tomorrow and call one of his compadres and say, hey, what about this?
I think they could because, you know, the team employees, like a GM or an assistant GM, they're not in the union. So they can obviously continue working in some capacity. They can't speak on the record about, or I'm sure even off the record, about players who are on 40-man rosters. So we're not going to hear from them. But I think they could, and I don't know this for sure, but I think they could continue talking trades and potentially come close to even reaching an agreement.
Yeah, I mean, it could be that situation where the lockout ends and then the next day it's just like 1,000 trades are all going through and the final free agents are being locked up. Could be a wild, wild day. But yeah, I mean, if you're just looking at the roster right now, okay, yes, they want to add another starting pitcher, understood. Probably not along the lines of the Gausman types, but somebody at the back end of that rotation. And to my eye, they need two infielders. Now, is that necessarily correct? And like we said, it doesn't necessarily have to be a free agent. But could they, in theory, go nuts and sign a Chris Bryant and then roll the dice with Santiago Espinal, Kevin Biggio at second base? Or do they need two infielders, in your opinion?
I think they need one and then two. I mean, if you get two good infielders, then you're in a really good spot. But I think the need is for one because, I mean, you definitely don't want to go into the season with Espinal and Biggio as your guys that you're counting on in those spots. And, you know, Kevin Smith behind them is depth. I think you'd much prefer, and I really think third base is probably the, you know, more logical spot to add if they can do that. And there's still some names there. I mean, you've got Chris Bryant, of course, that's the big name with Chris Taylor now nearing a deal with the Dodgers. Then, you know, I think Kyle Seager, he kind of gets overlooked in talking about some of these infielders, but he's pretty capable. So you could do a lot worse than adding Seager and then potentially bolstering your pitching staff a little bit more. So that's before we even get to the trade options where you've got your Jose Ramirez, your Matt Chapman, maybe a Ketel Marte. So there is some depth for them to look at. And yeah, to answer your question, Ben, I think they need one, and more than that would be a bonus.
Yeah. The bullpen, Ben, I kind of assume that they might still, again, I'm not sure about a Kenley Jansen kind of guy, but there are a couple of guys still out there who would be on that level in the free agent class. But I'm not sure I see them going there, mostly because, you know, the more you think about it, like if their teams are only going to be carrying, you know, 13 pitchers when we resume, five starters, eight relievers, you know, you get to six pretty quickly or five pretty quickly with this group, especially when you kind of factor in, and again, health, who knows, right? But, you know, Romano and Meza and Simber and Richards and Garcia and Julian Merriweather, who's out of options. So, you know, and whichever of Stripling or Pearson is not in the rotation or not in the Buffalo rotation, there's not, you know, again, they'll need more. And again, I know guys will get hurt, but there's not a whole lot of, there are not a whole lot of vacancies there right now.
Yeah. You know, it makes me think of the kind of significance of that David Phelps deal that they agreed to the other day, and it's a minor league deal. And so if they could do more like that, where it's not taking up a 40-man roster spot, just buys them a little bit of time. You get to spring training, all of a sudden the 60-day IL opens and you create room that way. So, I mean, I think that's one way you could do it, or you could try to create some of that, you know, depth that of course they'll need in the course of a season. You could do that by, you know, if you're trading for, let's say for argument's sake, it's an infielder. Well, maybe you can add on an optionable reliever in there, someone who's, you know, ready for the major leagues, but doesn't have to be on the big league roster all season. Because the Jays, you know, they do have some decent arms in the bullpen, but they don't necessarily have a lot of those optionable guys. So to me, that might be a nice add-on in a trade if they're able to do that.
Ben, we appreciate the time. Enjoy the last couple of hours of potential baseball conversation before we shut her down.
I will do my best. Sounds good, guys. Thanks.
See ya. Ben Nicholson-Smith, Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. I like Kyle Seager. the more I think about
it. Yeah, but you're thinking like on a 2-year deal or something, right?
Oh, or less, like a 1-year deal, right? Yeah. Well, that's part of the appeal, though, isn't it?
Yes, because you may have a third baseman one way or another coming along.
You know? Yeah, and he's not promised anything, but as much as I can kill Trevor Story on his home road splits, like you look at the Kyle Seager home road splits, and we think of Seattle as a very pitcher friendly ballpark, but like it is very pitcher friendly. Mm-hmm. Just ask Adrian Beltre when he signed that massive deal and what happened to his offensive numbers when he went there. His away splits, he's got an OPS that's like 80 points higher on the road. He's an over 800 OPS guy on the road in a 721 at home in Seattle. Of course, had the big home run numbers this past season.
Yep.
He's not a big walk guy, but he can take the occasional walk, and he's left-handed, and he plays third base.
And he plays the position well.
Yeah.
Right? So, no, that's not... If that's not a terrible scenario, that would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, because you're also maybe just keeping the spot warm for, maybe Jordan Groshans or maybe that other guy.
Yes, that other guy and Gabriel Moreno, who's, you know what, this is another thing maybe I want to get to before we take the break, because it was, I forget who mentioned it during the media availability today, though, but the idea of catcher defense being at a premium with a guy like Kevin Gausman, who's splitter is his premium pitch, and he's going to be throwing balls in the dirt, and I know I've come to grips with the idea that Alejandro Kirk isn't on this team on opening day anyways, but that it's not going to be a situation where Kirk was Ray's personal catcher. It feels like that's not going to be a pairing that works. You're going to have to play good defense if you were going to want to catch Kevin Gausman.
Yes, and, again, the defensive hierarchy of the Blue Jays catchers right now would be Danny Jansen, Reese McGuire.
Correct.
And then your guy, Alejandro Kirk. It'd be fascinating to see what they do there. If you look again, Reese McGuire is a guy who they basically gave up on last year, and anybody could have had him. But he's he's sort of as major league backup catchers go, he's not that. They're all like him, right?
Yes.
They're all like him.
They absolutely are all like him, and that's why they had no qualms about allowing anybody in the world to claim him on waivers, and then they were happy that he wasn't claimed so they could bring him back. But, yeah, there are Reese McGuire's around, so,
So, but if defense is at a premium, right now, that would be, that Danny Jansen would have a significant leg up on everybody else. I think he does anyway.
Yep.
And they like him. They like him very much. And I think they're, every once in a while you see they have those moments where you think, boy, the offense is starting to look like it did in the minor leagues. Maybe it's going to come around.
Yeah.
So I think he's, again, he will be your opening day catcher. I think there's no question about that, barring something really dramatic here.
Mm-hmm.
But, and Gabe Moreno, the question's going to be, if his bat is as good as it appears, do you want that guy catching?
Yeah, it's the million-dollar question, because if you can get that offense and passable defense at that position, there's literally nothing more valuable, because that's the most difficult position to fill either way, and then you DH him, but it's just such a toll physically.
Yep.
I mean, just ask Buster Posey, who's decided to go sit by a beach at the age of, 34 or something, because he's beaten up, or go ask Joe Mauer, and those are MVP caliber players, and they had great peaks, but they didn't play till they were 40. And not to say that they would have if they didn't play that position, but there was a better shot of it.
Oh, and Joe Mauer finished it playing first base and DH, right? Like it'll be a really interesting organizational question, because it's incredibly tempting to think, boy, we could have a plus offensive player who can play behind the plate 3 days out of four. My God, there's like how many of those, in the entire sport, how many of those are there?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and it's a decision that's been made. Carlos Delgado was a catcher, right?
Yeah, strangely enough, he was. Yeah, didn't last
long. What did he look like as a catcher? Did you ever see him catch?
I saw him catch. Yeah, I saw him catch. He looked, didn't see him catch a lot. I saw him catch in spring training, and then I saw him play left field in spring training when they said, holy smokes, because he hit some moonshots in that spring. Like, some of the longest home runs I've ever seen were hit by Carlos Delgado that spring. And then they realized, boy, we got to find a way. Let's this young man needs to play. And then they put him in left field, and it was not pretty. So, they found a home for him eventually, right? But I don't think anybody ever thought he was the greatest defensive catcher in the world. But that went out the window essentially that spring. And I'm not saying history will repeat itself, but Moreno's already played third base in AAA a little bit. He played third base in the Arizona Fall League. they're trying to keep their options open here because, again, like, you don't know, but it sure feels like he's going to show up this year.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, if he's that guy, he has to show up. If the Blue Jays are a World Series contender and he's that guy,
yeah,
then he has to be in the major leagues this year.
Unless somebody really great is blocking him. But, you know, that's, yeah, no, it just, it feels like it. It just feels like, and again, he's there to bring him onto a team where, you know, like a good team, a contending team, where he doesn't have to come and be the savior the day he arrives.
Yeah.
I think his bat's going to force, same way Alejandro Kirk's bat, you know, he didn't figure he had to look as quickly as he did.
No.
Injuries as well, but, you know, no one, just because he can hit.
Yep.
Like the kid can hit. So this guy can hit more, it would appear.
Yes, and play a little defense. And he's a different body type as well, seemingly.
Although pretty much everybody in baseball has a different body type than Alejandro Kirk. I would say. God love him.
That's a really good point. All right. So hopefully we get to that place where we have spring training games where we can evaluate Gabriel Moreno. Fingers crossed on that. All right. Let's take a break and talk to Adnan Virk of MLB Network next. It's the Fan Drive Time. Ben Annis, Stephen Braun, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis and Stephen Braun. And this is it's a general sports show. It's a variety sports show. So, you know, baseball goes away. We can do other things.
We can.
We don't necessarily want to.
No, but there's lots of things. The Leafs. We can talk about the Leafs a lot.
We will talk about
NFL.
The Leafs.
NFL's really exciting.
Yeah. We will talk about the Leafs later on with Mike Zeisberger. But when you work for MLB Network,
yes,
kind of difficult to diverge from MLB talk.
But he works for every network.
I know. But that's his other job. But his MLB Network job, what will he do for the next month or two? It's Adnan Virk. What are your plans?
Hi, Ben, Steven. Great to be with you guys. 6.5 hours until Armageddon here at MLB Network. But as Steven mentioned, yeah, I got my hockey. I'm going to do NHL Network tonight with Brian Lawton and Steve Conroy, 6 to 7 Eastern. I know it's not available back home. We got Nathan MacKinnon returning to the Avalanche lineup. We got the Flyers and Rangers. So, yes, I will keep busy with hockey and stay with bated breath until the baseball, we believe, will come back.
I got to say, we've got the MLB Network on here silently in the studio, and I did see that they're airing Bull Durham tonight. That's a bad sign, right, when they're already into the baseball movie vault.
Like, great movie, though.
It is a great movie, but isn't that bad? Like, doesn't that tell you something? Doesn't that remind you of, you know, pandemic? Like, let's run classic sports movies on sports television. Yay.
I completely agree. And I remember during the pandemic, I did actually enjoy watching some old games. I'm sure you guys did too. Mm-hmm. I rewatched that game 693, of course, Joe Carter game.
Yep.
You know, the best game I watched during the pandemic was my friend Sean McDonough, of course, called the 92 Blue Jays. So, I mean, excuse me, not 92 Jays. He did call that. But I watched the Barry Bonds game where Francisco Cabrera got the winning run, obviously, the Braves, Sid Bream slide, all the rest.
Oh, yeah. That was a great game.
Like, Steven, watching that game again start to finish, first of all, I think it was like a 2-hour, 40-minute game, which is amazing. But the fact that, like, Stan Belinda comes in and is completely a disaster. Randy Marsh is working the home plate umpire, and he literally struck out David Berghill 3 times, but did not get the K he wanted. And then eventually, of course, Cabrera gets that hit, and Sid Bream just running like a giraffe around second base. So, listen, for all of us baseball fans out there, maybe go back, watch a few classic games, and we'll be airing those games. But you're right. We were showing some press conferences earlier today, and it is a reminder of just how healthy the game is. We had Corey Seager's press conference, you know, $325 million. Our former Blue Jays, Simeon, signing for $175. So the money is there, particularly for the top-end players. But unfortunately, I was trying to be a Pollyanna. I was trying to stay optimistic. So they'll get this done. Mm. But as the three of us know, it was never really a hard deadline. At December 1st, you go, okay, but does it really matter? Like, it impacts the winter meetings, of which I was going to be going to Orlando next week. I was excited to go, a little bit of sunshine. But as we all know, when does it really matter? Like Feb 1, like post Super Bowl, like once spring training games are impacted, actual regular season games are impacted, that's when it's a true deadline. So it's a bummer. There's no doubt about it. I think we all fully expect a lockout happening tonight at midnight Eastern. But it's been 27 years of labor peace. And again, I don't want to sound like a show for the company, but think about the fact if the three of us were to say labor peace in baseball, like, not a great history, right? We go back to Marvin Miller and all the rest of it. But it's actually been 27 years. Like, yeah. It's kind of crazy. Like, the strike was devastating. Of course, it irreparably damaged baseball Montreal. We know that. But it's actually been amazing how long they've had peace in the 27 years, NFL's in a lockout. Hockey's done it twice. NBA's done it twice. It's actually been a pretty good run for baseball.
Yeah, and you know what? And when they come back, and fingers crossed that it will be in plenty of time to get a full Grapefruit League season in, because I want to see me some Grapefruit League. But that there'll be a couple of differences to the game. One of those, I hope, is robo-umps. The other, it seems pretty clearly, is going to be expanded playoffs. And this latest proposal that we've seen out there, Jesse Rogers reported it from ESPN, about choosing your first-round playoff opponent, which, I don't know, might be on your network, Adnan. How would you feel about hosting that playoff selection show on the Sunday, the last Sunday, the regular season, and, you know, some representative from the two teams that get to pick the two wildcard teams are putting bulletin board material out there?
Yeah, Ben, my first thought was it's a little bit gimmicky, right? Kind of feels a little WWE or XFL, like something Vince McMahon would say. But then I said, listen, baseball, if they keep it the way it is, people smash it, right? Oh, they're too stuck in their old ways. They're too traditionalists. You know, adapt with the times, man. It's 2021. But if they do something like this, you go, oh, my God, then you upset all the fundamentalists and say, what is baseball doing? This is ridiculous. So you can never totally win, but I think you got to try. Like, I mean, that particular idea, like, I kept thinking, imagine the Yankees and Red Sox, and my old ESPN colleague Aaron Boone has to point at Alex Cora and say, I want you.
Yes.
I want you.
Like,
it's a little goofy, of course, but it would be fun, right? You don't think for a day or two it'd be kind of fun, especially if the team that picked that team and that team then beat them? Of course it'd be fun for bragging rights. So we know the major issues, right? Expanded playoffs, which I think will happen. The owners want that. That's more money. I'll be honest, not crazy about that. I love the fact baseball has 10 playoff teams. That's the fewest of any major sport, only 33%. I do think if you have 14 teams, that dilutes the regular season a little bit, but I think we're trending in that direction. The big one, I think, guys, is fascinating is arbitration. Trevor Knows helps with the players who are half on Chris Bryant, all the rest of it. And right now, it's 6 years before he become a free agent. And the players are pushing, my understanding is, for like 4 years. And I'm like, there's just no way. Like, that's just not going to happen. The owners are not going to relinquish on that. Okay, 5 years till he become a free agent? No. But can we get the minimum salary up? Because the league has become very young, right? All these young stars, the Tatises, the Acunas, which is why these owners try to lock up those young players. Wander Franco, obviously, most notably. But maybe you can increase minimum salary, and maybe you can get to arbitration a year early. Like, maybe there's some wiggle room there. But that's one of those issues. Like, for those who are, like, very casually saying, I don't get it. Baseball made $10 billion a couple of years ago. Why are they having a lockout? To me, that's a big one. Arbitration, free agency, and, of course, the whole issue of tanking, which I think we can all agree is something that's awfully frustrating.
Yeah. Now, you know, expanded playoff, in theory, is going to help you in terms of competitiveness, right? You're going to have more teams in it. You're going to have expanded pennant races, so that's going to keep more teams. That should be, to me, I'm okay with it, and I'm more than okay with it, and I think it's a win-win for the players and the owners. I know the players will hold on to it as a chip, but I don't see what, you know, it's going to be more revenue and more teams competing, therefore probably higher payrolls if they're trying to compete. So I can't see why they'd be against it, to be honest. But I think you're right. Like, if there is kind of a fundamental issue in this one, it's about how younger players are going to get paid and compensated earlier in their careers, because they represent a lot of the value in the system. But, you know, the flip side of it is that, Adnan, and we got David Sampson on. I will run this by him later. But, you know, one of the kind of small ironies here is that two of the guys on the negotiating committee for the union, Max Scherzer and Marcus Semien, you know, did okay under the old rules today, this week, right? Like, yeah. Like they didn't
right.
do so bad. Like,
so bad, but we have two guys who just made $305 million. Next question.
Yeah, so it's an interesting discussion, right? There are outward signs that the business is healthy. Because I think, you know, obviously some teams spend in some years and others don't, but I always think that spending, I always assume that spending is rational, that the people who are putting that money out believe they're going to get a return for it.
Right. You're not spending it unless there's a reason for it. The Texas Rangers built this beautiful ballpark, which they want to have these selling it every night. They've obviously flushed with cash, and the team was awful this season. So let's just go ahead and get better quickly. So we'll sign Semien, we'll sign Seager, we'll sign John Gray, who all the analytics tell me is going to be the next Zach Wheeler / Robbie Ray. He's got great peripherals. He's got great numbers by the analytics. And don't forget about Colorado. He'll be better there. So away we go. And I think that's where the top guys always run the union. That's why I'm confident we don't miss games. Because ultimately, if it gets to February 5th, February 6th, those Max Scherzers and Marcus Semiens and Bryce Harpers will go, hey, We're not missing any checks here, okay? Like, to be clear, Major League Baseball players are not getting checks in the offseason. Like, I don't know how many people realize that. Like, once the games begin, that's when their money comes in. So it actually isn't that shocking they kind of just press pause right now. They can't use the facilities. Okay, fine. Some guys would like to know where they're going, obviously, to help their families. But once you get to February, like, that's when you go, hang on a second. We generally need a month for spring training. We can all agree 6 weeks is too long. Fine. You need about a month, though, just to get rolling. And for all those free agents that still need to get signed, listen, we had this incredible spending spree, but you still got Carlos Correa and lots of other players who need to get signed, not to mention those mid-level guys who get squeezed inevitably when it gets to February 18th and are trying to find a home. So that's where I hope that the players realize, and the owners as well, hey, listen, for the good of the game, let's get this done early February, have a wild free agency. Like, 2 weeks of free agency will be amazing, and then we'll get to spring training and away we go. But I'm with you, Steve. Anybody who says what's wrong with baseball or what's happened to baseball, listen, we can argue about the cachet of the sport on a national level, that it's become regionalized, none of star power, fine. I hear all that. But they're still making a ton of money. Go to any regional sports network. You go to Pittsburgh and Pirates games rate. You go to Detroit, Tigers games rate. So baseball's still in really, really healthy shape.
Yeah, as evidenced by the $1 billion in contracts that just handed out this week. Talking to Adnan Virk. The other thing that I think is going to happen, I don't know if it can happen in time for this upcoming season because the schedule's already made, but seems pretty clear. If you have universal DH, you can just do whatever you want with the divisions and realign. And you know, there shouldn't be a traditionalist pushback to that because the divisions have been evolving for the last 100 years. And the natural inclination, I think, from Blue Jays fans would be, hey, let's get away from the Red Sox, get away from the Yankees, and maybe push to be in a division where those two don't exist. Except, I mean, if you got more playoff teams anyways, I wonder if, you know, you don't benefit from, what was it, Ric Flair that said, to be the best, you got to beat the best? And also, you get a lot more, you know, national baseball media attention when you play those two teams. What do you think about what baseball looks like from a divisional standpoint when we return?
Well, honestly, I'll give it some thought. My quick answer is, woo, to quote the great
very good.
Listen,
yes.
If you're going to have, we can always do this, right? NBA style, Eastern Conference, Western Conference. Truly the best teams will get to be matched up, and that way you don't have to worry about divisions, and you can figure out the travel and all the rest of it. I'm with you, Ben. I don't think people care necessarily about divisions. Like, somebody was lamenting to me the other day, like, oh, remember when the Astros and the NL? I'm like, I do remember it, but I don't sit there thinking about it. Like, yeah, Mets Astros 86. It was an epic NLCS. Aside from that, yeah, now they're in the AL West, and it's fine. So I'm with you that generally realignment or divisions, like, people who get stuck up on that kind of stuff are just being stodgy. Like, go ahead, adjust it. It's supposed to be done for geographic reasons. Like, teams in the NL Central should be situated together. Milwaukee, the Cubs, the Cardinals, et cetera. And if there's one team sticking out, like, go ahead, adjust it. Like, here's the good news about having a work stoppage. This is the only good news, is you can try to adjust and fix things that you believe need fixing. So if this is the time that we can try to figure out how to get a pitch clock in, well, then let's do it. If you can use something as a negotiating ploy to make the game better, fine. I used to argue against people trying to abolish the shift, saying the shift was born out of intelligence. People were smart enough to say, look at these trends, let's counteract that. But now I've come around on it and said, you know what? That's fine. Like, I get the intelligence part of it, but it's not as much fun. So let's just go back to being fun again. Let's just go back to having guys, and we'll do what the NBA did. No more, you know, illegal defense. Like, if that could come about to make the game better, I'm all for it. So you're right. Whether it's divisional realignment, pitch clocks, the shift, I mean, whatever you want to do to make the game better, we're all for it. As long as the games happen, I think we're all in favor of whatever adjustments need to be made.
Well, I think if you look at the evolution of other games, right, and some of the radical change, you mentioned, you know, look, basketball invented the three-point shot. There's nothing more radical than that. Does anybody want to make a counter argument that you know, that the game isn't more entertaining with it? You know, I know baseball is rooted in tradition, and that's one of its selling points in a way, that the kind of the plate, the nostalgia, that it's the same game your grandparents watched, your great grandparents watched. But I don't know in the sports entertainment world in the 21st century that there's a good counter argument, you know, for it, against tweaking the game for entertainment value.
And to your point, when you add playoff teams, I gave the reason against it, that win in the regular season, but you gave the reason for it. I mean, if you've got seven teams battling for five wild card spots, you've got three division leaders. Like, hang on a second. Now you've got more than half the league potentially looking for the playoffs.
Yep.
So, yes, you will get fair weather fans who only care about their team in August, but great, that's more fans who are invested. The diehards are always going to be there. I have Orioles fans who are going to watch, even as their team hurtles towards a 60-win season. But you and I both know there are going to be fans who go, you know what, I probably wasn't going to be watching the Jays a ton, but it's August 10th, and they're in this thing. They're two games out of the third wildcard spot, so what the hell? So you're right. If you want to make things more palatable for people, we all know people love the playoffs. 14 teams feels like a no-brainer. And whatever happens, people have initial resistance and they accept it. At first, the wild card, you go, okay. But the problem became the wild card winner ended up winning all the time. And you go, well, wait, there should be a deterrent to being the wild card. Great. We'll have a second wild card winner. Now we can really reward the top seed. If there's seven playoff teams, well, the number one seed gets the bye. And then it's 2 versus 7 and 3 versus 6, 4 versus 5. So there's advantages, I think, to all these different ideas that are being bandied about.
Yeah, and it's more fun to talk about than, you know, lawyers speaking in rooms, you know, going over the CBA and what it could look like for the next 2 months. Adnan, always great to catch up. Talk again soon, buddy.
Thanks so much, boys. We'll keep hope alive and enjoy Bull Durham on MLB Network.
Yes.
Well, Adnan Virk.
I think they just had a promo for Ken Burns Baseball. That's a long series. That'd kill some hours, wouldn't it?
I think that he's added some innings, too, because that wasn't the original. It was 9, and I think they're on to inning like 11 now.
My God. But it's, yeah, I would think the programming heads at MLB Network are, like, look, obviously, December, January, not exactly the salad days for baseball content anyway, but they're probably thinking about, the wheels are turning right now.
Well,
and what else can we find in the vault?
And at least in the before times or in the now times for the next, you know, 6 hours, that they could talk to team executives. You can't even interview people here. This is it. The channel of information is going to be whatever is given to us at the conclusion of the day's negotiating between the league and the players.
Yeah, I hope folks understand because, you know, we will not be able to talk to baseball players.
That's right.
During this lockout. Just so everybody, like, it's not like we don't want to. It would be lovely. And we could go through the a J a day, except they are not allowed to talk to us and we are not allowed to talk to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a bummer. It's a good thing. I mean, it's always a good thing that you don't have any injured players, but it's a very good thing that the Blue Jays don't have, you know, like a Kirby Yates type situation where not even after he suffered that injury, like before, when you're trying to get a guy healthy, that you're paying very close attention to what he's doing. He's at your facility. He's talking to your team doctors because you can't even do that. Like, I don't know what you would do. The Red Sox just signed James Paxton, right?
Yes.
James Paxton coming off Tommy John surgery, will not be ready for opening day, you wouldn't think. And what do they do with him for the next 2 months while he's not allowed into a Boston Red Sox facility?
It's a really interesting question because, you know, like in theory, he's definitely not allowed into their facility.
Yeah.
He's in theory not allowed to be in contact with their medical people.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you do that. Is he just sitting his, you know, work out in his backyard and not talk to anybody? I know there are other people who could, there's certainly private folks who could in the sports science who could work with them, et cetera. But it does, you know, it does change. Like, look, what the reason you build these big facilities is so they're 365 days. It's what the Jays talked about all along, right? 365. We can have people there all the time. Not going to be much use for the next little while.
Well, and to bring it closer to home, like Vladimir Guerrero Jr., his emergence this season is probably in large part to his rededication to his physical health and physical training and you know, spending some time in the Dominican Republic, but some time in the facilities.
A lot of time in Florida and a lot of consultation with the dietitians, you know, who talk to grandma, and it's all of that stuff. I know, I think it's, look, proof's in what you saw, the guy that arrived in spring training, right? That wasn't an accident. Well, he's not going to be talking to the dietitians this winter.
Yeah. I wonder how it works for a guy like Gabriel Moreno, who's not on the 40-man roster, though. And isn't he going to play some baseball this winter, more baseball?
He can do whatever the team allows him to do. I don't know if he's going to play winter ball or not, but yeah, he will be. Anybody who's not on the 40-man can use the facility, make use of all the personnel, any of that stuff.
So maybe he'll have a leg up in spring training because he'll have been at the facility, he'll have been playing and maybe some of these other guys won't. You know who has the answers to some of these questions?
As he always does.
Our next guest, David Sampson, former Major League executive, host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson, joins us next. Fan Drive Time, Ben Annis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.